drawing room over here.
Oh, hey, come on in. On a Victorian island, a family falls quietly away from each other and a girl goes missing. Meanwhile, in the suburbs of Sydney, a man's guilty conscience leads him to hospital waiting rooms and an unexpected relationship. Peggy Frew's new novel is Islands. John Hughes's new novel is No One. They've both been shortlisted for this year's Miles Franklin Award and they are both my guests in the drawing room. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks, Patricia. Hi, John.
Hi, Patricia. Now, hi, Peggy.
Before we get too far into the ideas of the novel, let's just get situated. For the listeners who haven't had a chance to read your works yet, can we get kind of the elevator pitch, please? I'm going to start with you, Peggy.
Oh, God. I hate this because I'm so bad at it. Took me a whole book to figure out what I was saying. Okay. Islands is the story of a family in which a member goes missing, as a 15-year-old daughter of Helen and John and younger sister to June. But the book really is about what happens when somebody goes missing and what that means for those left behind. So it's actually a kind of big spider web of all the interconnected lives of those that knew Anna and what her absence means for them. And it's told through multiple viewpoints and using different voices. How's that?
I like it. You did a good job.
Yeah, I think the elevator would have arrived at the floor a long time ago.
No. It's a really tall building. Hey, John, how about you?
I feel much the same as Peggy on this one. Always difficult to give a synopsis. But basically, mine deals with a person who in the very early hours of a Monday morning outside Redfern Station in Sydney thinks he feels a dull thud on the side of his car. But by the time he registers this and turns the car around and goes back to the place, he can't see anyone there. And he gets out of the car and on the road, he thinks there's some blood on the road. And so the book then deals with him in a way, trying to find out whether or not he has actually hit someone. And this kind of takes him into, I suppose, the back streets and the underworld of inner city Sydney, and also I think into the heart of our relationship to our colonial past.
Now, Peggy, there's a line that's spoken in your book. Anyone would think these are not the same events we're both talking about. How did you want to approach that in the book, the idea that a story can seem very different depending on who's doing the telling, you know, and often we're very unreliable narrators of our own stories?
Yeah, thanks. That's a really great, no one's ever really pulled that out before, but I feel like that is a kind of pivotal line, not only for what the book ended up being about, but in terms of how I figured out the way in which the story was sort of asking to be told, if that makes sense. This book had its origins as what I think is called a practice novel. I actually wrote a first draft of this book when I was in my early 20s and it, you know, got put in a drawer. And then I wrote a couple of other books and when it was time to, you know, the last time I was trying to come up with a new project, I thought maybe it's time to return to that book about that family that's set on the island. And what I realised was that 20 years had gone by. I was now in my early 40s and when I returned to that material, which I actually really only did in my mind, I never pulled out the manuscript and looked at it, but when I started to think about the family and the characters and their story of what happens when this kid goes missing, I realised that I had a completely different view, in particular of parent-child relationships and specifically mother-daughter relationships, because when I wrote that very early draft, I was writing as someone who knew what it was like to be a kid and knew what it was like to be a daughter, but I didn't know what it was like to be a mother. And when I came back to that material, I had the other side. And so the initial manuscript was all from the point of view of one character, that being June, the older sister in the family. But when I came back to it, I realised that perhaps the way to tell this story, in particular because I now had this new access to other experiences and looking at relationships from more than one angle, that perhaps this was going to be a story that wanted to be told in a kind of polyphonic, you know, a multi-voiced narrative. And once I cracked that open, it was, I had so much enjoyment writing this book, and I wouldn't often say that about writing, but when I'd finished one kind of voice, I would sit down the next day and kind of think, wow, I wonder who's going to come next. You know, I was sort of inhabited by these different voices.
So that breakdown of the relationship feels like sort of the perfect example of that idea. Like, it's common, it's normal, but when you're in the midst of it, it's kind of everything. That's kind of what you're trying to get at, wasn't it?
That we only have our own view, is that what you mean?
Yeah.
And that we can't see others. Well, I think my characters try, and some of them are more or less successful at knowing what their family members or people that they're in relationships with are experiencing or how they see the world. But I think the more that I write and the more that I read and the more that I live, I sort of almost feel that one of the biggest tasks that we have as humans is to try to understand what it's like to be another person. And it's also an impossible task. And I think that in reading and writing and in art making in general, and particularly I think it really is through art that we find ways to do that. I don't know if I answered your question, sorry. I think I just went off on it.
I liked it though. That's the thing. A question just sparks an idea, particularly in the drawing room. John, your novel is firmly centred around a single viewpoint.
Yes.
But I can imagine it being a very different story if the sort of, poetess got to have her say.
I think that's exactly right. It would have been. But I think that for me, what was important was this sense of this kind of obsessive view that comes about as a result of a particular experience of growing up, not knowing really who your parents are, who you really are. So someone who grows up without really any sense of a kind of identity or history at all, and coming into contact with a place and a person who has a very strong sense of their own history, but at the same time that history being a very disturbed and traumatic one. And I suppose that sense of someone like the narrator looking at that other character and trying to get some sense of that person's experience. For me, it was very important that we didn't get outside of his consciousness.
Both of these books are really engaged with the idea of memory as well, looking back at the way we remember our own lives or our own stories. Novels often take the position of truth in some ways, but it feels like you were both interested in the way that even our own truth is kind of permeable. Is that what you were trying to get at, John?
Yes, I think that's right, because the novel is deliberately set 20 years or so after that particular accident outside Redfern Station. And I suppose it tries to convey something of the way in which memory works. And so the way in which even the person who is having the memories can't be completely certain as to whether or not this was exactly how the things happened. So, and then going back further for him, going back into his childhood and the snippets that he has of things that he thinks he remembers about his parents, and this one photograph he has of them where he thinks he's in a pram. So that sense of, I suppose, the past, a past that you're not sure that you've lived, but about which you seem to have memories, and then a past that you have actually lived, but the sense there in which those memories may even be less real or tangible to you than these other ones. I suppose that in a way, the book is looking at that's the strange phenomenon, I guess, of memory itself, and why it is that some things stay and why it is that some things become more significant to us than others.
On RN, I'm Patricia Carvelis, and with me in the drawing room are Peggy Frew and John Hughes, two of the authors shortlisted for this year's Miles Franklin Award. Peggy, Anna is the daughter and the sister who goes missing in your book. She's constantly talked about, but we never actually see her own viewpoint. Why did you choose to keep her absent from us, like the reader, in this way?
That's a very good question. And I don't know that the answer is as interesting as we would hope. But because I kind of landed on this this kind of form that I, to my mind anyway, I have this image of a spider web where there's all these interconnected narrative threads that belong to all of the characters that surrounded Anna, and Anna's absence is the whole at the middle of the web. It became very quickly apparent to me that if we were to get inside Anna's head, because we have access to the thoughts of all of these other characters, and we have access to most characters only appear once, but June, who's Anna's older sister, who I would call the main character of the book, if there is one, we encounter at different stages of her life. So when we first meet her, she's about 12, and then by the end of the book, she's about, she's I think 40 or so. So because we can go in and out of June's mind at different times of her life, I suppose that if we were able to go inside Anna's mind, then she would be able to tell us what happened to her. And the whole book is really about this, and I don't, this isn't a spoiler because it's certainly not a crime novel, it's not a mystery really. The whole book is really about these characters, these people, Anna's relatives, having to go on with their lives without, in a state of possibly terminal uncertainty. You know, they may never know what happened to her, and that I think was very important to the development of all of those characters. So in a nutshell, if Anna was there, she could tell us what happened to her, and then, it would be a completely different book, yeah. I suppose. Yeah.
John, in your book, there's the obvious absence, which is the victim of a car accident, but who may not even exist. But there's a different absence that you consider, and it's one you referenced earlier, I think, in the conversation when you talked about our colonial past. How did the absence of Australia's Indigenous people and their stories become part of the story that you wanted to tell?
The novel started with two cars, if I can approach it in that way. Yeah. My young son's first car was one of those wonderful tank like Volvo station wagons, which was covered in little dings and some larger dings, and it just made me start thinking about the way in which the car is being like a kind of carrier of accidents, and that though each had left its trace, the accident itself was invisible, much the same way, I suppose, it made me start thinking about the past. And then in the second instance, one evening driving up to St Albans on the Hawkesbury north of Sydney, I ran into a large kangaroo, and after I got over the shock, I stopped to see if I could find this creature in the dark, because I didn't like the idea of it sort of lying there in pain, and I couldn't find it. It made me start doubting whether or not it had actually happened at all. It was something sort of dreamlike about it. But then when I looked, I saw there's this massive, quite a large dent in the front of the car, and the headlight was smashed and all that sort of thing. So for some reason or other, those two images of those two cars just set up a kind of resonance for me about the way in which kind of history itself, this kind of vehicle, could become a different sort of vehicle, I suppose, which sort of takes us into our own history itself, and the way in which that history carries, or our history carries, untold dings in its body too, which though for the most part we didn't make ourselves, they're nevertheless still our body as well. And I guess that the guilt that goes along with that carriage as well, that so even if we may not necessarily have been responsible for many of those dings, explicitly or directly responsible, that we still carry them as part of our body. And so that sense to me then that there's our past, the past of this nation, and what happens in that past is no secret, but at the same time it's as if we like to keep it not entirely visible before us. It's there as a kind of background that we'd prefer in most instances not to think about. And I suppose that for me, I think I say somewhere in the book that this sense that, you know, we live in a country where non-existence is the true existence, where guilt can't be redeemed, and no one knows what to do with ghosts that are real. And that's in a way, I suppose, what I wanted to explore in the book, and this sense of the absence being perhaps the most powerful presence of all.
If I can just go back to you, Peggy, you know, and in some ways both of the novels do this, but both of the novels have this kind of dreamlike quality, if I can describe it that way. And as we've talked about, they sort of jump around in time and location and character in your case too. How much did the form dictate the story you were telling?
The form and the story grew together, and each informed the other. I think I didn't really know what the story was going to be, and as I wrote and figured that out, the form emerged from that, if that makes sense. And that is my experience of almost all writing, is that I generally start with a place, a sense of a place, and some characters often come along, well, usually come along pretty quickly after that. And then I suppose that means that the story or the concerns are kind of there before the form is solidified, but then they sort of begin to inform one another. And, you know, sometimes you get trapped in a form and you realise, oh, I can't make this work with these sort of rules that I've set up for myself. So you have to go back and figure it out. And, yeah, it's a very, what's the right word? It's a kind of process of calibration, maybe. You know, you fiddle with something and with the form and the story sort of slips into focus and you realise, oh, okay, that's what it was asking for, or you realise that it's not working and you have to change something. That is an extremely unsatisfactory and vague answer. I'm really sorry, but it's just it's nothing's that clear when you're working on a book, not for me anyway.
Well, one of the unusual aspects of the sort of Miles Franklin Award is that it talks about portraying Australian life. And I suppose my question is to you first, John, what does it actually mean to portray Australia in this age?
It's a good question. I think it's not something that I set out deliberately to do, I suppose, to think, well, I'm going to write about Australia as it currently is. I think that as a writer who's grown up in Australia and lived a large part of my life in Australia, I guess that's what I'm formed by, and the concerns, you know, the concerns of this place are my concerns too. But I think, you know, that you know, my protagonist is the child of asylum seekers who die en route to this country, and he grows up in this place, a complete, as I said, without an identity, a complete outsider. And so I suppose that gives him an outsider's view of certain of the things which perhaps we may take for granted. And I think it was, for me, that was very useful in a way, because although, as we were saying at the beginning, Peggy has many voices, I only have one voice, but that my character is a very, very different creature from me. And I think that by trying to see the world through the eyes of such a person and see Australia through the eyes of such a person, I think I was actually, I hope I'm actually able to make strange, I guess, a number of the things which I suppose I would usually take for granted, to actually see them anew and see them in a way that perhaps makes them more startling and perhaps more pressing than they might ordinarily be. So I think, yes, so that in terms of dealing with contemporary Australia, I think that certainly the novel deals with the way in which our history is still very much there in the present, that it's a history which is an unresolved history, I suppose, as the histories of most places are, but one which still presses very hard against the surface of the present, and also looking at the ways in which we deal with, especially with asylum seekers and displaced and displaced people more generally, and what that tells us about, I suppose, the kind of people that we are.
You guys have been such great guests. Thanks so much for coming in, and congratulations and good luck.
Thank you so much. And I just have to say, John, I had one of those cars, one of those Volvos. I miss it dearly.
There you go.
Yes, I wish my son still had it, I must say.
Guys, you've been great guests. See you later. John Hughes and Peggy Frew have been my guests in the drawing room. They're both authors and they're shortlisted for this year's Miles Franklin Award. The winner is announced this Thursday, so good luck to both of them, of course. John's novel is called No One and Peggy's novel is called Islands.